Hey there, I'm your host Kiju, and this is the Kokoro Gaden Podcast.
Hey folks, so I hope you're having a happy new year and that things are going well for you. One of the things I wanted to talk about today was the fact that we have been just hit with a lot of different situations and circumstances over the past couple years. There's been a global pandemic, there's been supply chain issues affecting everything from seed starting trays to fertilizer to drip irrigation to flowers to wedding cancellations to the demand for flowers spiking. It's been a couple crazy years, and I think it would be amiss if we didn't think it was going to have an impact on us as flower growers. So I want to kind of share a little bit more of what happened to us during the pandemic here with you today. So back in 2020, as we're heading into the winter, we had some pretty big plans. We had some weddings lined up, we had a lot of our clients still regularly ordering and buying from us, and we were all set to make 2020 our biggest season yet. And then the pandemic hit, and things changed a little bit. We found that all of our wedding clients canceled, which don't blame them at all, and given the circumstances, things weren't actually going to go back to semi-normal for quite a long time. And we found ourselves in May in the midst of social distancing and an entire lockdown of basically the entire world, alone with our flowers. And here's the problem, is that we really didn't have a market set up for the situation that we were in. We had a lot of flowers, couldn't get them to people, and were frankly kind of terrified out of our minds as far as the pandemic was. We didn't know how long this would go on. We didn't know what else would happen. We didn't know if we were at the end of civilization and society at the time. So what we started doing was, instead of carrying on as usual and trying to, in essence, make it so that we continued on with life as normal, we instead tried to see what else we could do and see how we could pivot. So one of the things we started doing actually was more, in essence, on-demand floral designs and bouquets. As opposed to having a set commercial or private subscription from a company or a person, we ended up just posting some of our floral arrangements or bouquets that were available online. And though a lot of our floral clients and floral designers were no longer and could no longer buy from us due to their weddings also canceling, we did find that the general public and selling retail was a new outlet for us to be able to move our flowers. And interestingly enough, as we have seen throughout the years of the pandemic, there's been a massive explosion for the appreciation and the enjoyment of flowers and floral bouquets within the private home for oneself, not necessarily associated with an event such as an anniversary or a wedding or even a birthday necessarily, but flowers for the sake of being flowers. And this is pretty cool, because something that I actually learned a while back is that during times of crisis or periods of stress, people actually are drawn to things like flowers, even though there may be an unforeseeable future ahead of us, even though things may seem uncertain. At the same time, we can have flowers. Flowers that offer a beautiful scent, or have a lot of color, or even just their presence changes things, makes life a little bit easier to manage, brings a little bit of beauty when the world may seem a bit dark, or scary, or ugly, or unknown. And I think that's one of the things that really drew our customers to the flowers, is that it offered a way to have a source of emotional anchorment, a sense of realness, of groundedness, and that despite what was going on in the outside world, the flowers in front of them had bloomed. Nature did not know there was a pandemic going on, and had continued on with the seasons and with the cycle of life. And there is something very grounding in that, not only for us as the growers, but for the people that purchased our flowers and appreciated them. Fast forward to now in 2022, our business model is actually quite different. We've moved away actually from large weddings, and we've moved away from a lot of the wholesale sales that we were doing to floral designers and other retailers. What we found is that it was actually causing us a lot of stress to do weddings and full floral design installations, and we found that what we actually enjoyed more were a lot of these small elopements that did end up happening during the pandemic. We were approached by several couples during the pandemic that were deciding last minute for a very small elopement, just the two of them, and they requested that we make the personals for them in the form of a bridal bouquet and a boutonniere. These weddings were very small, very private events, which nobody else were invited to. But what we found is that this actually was much more intimate and a much more beautiful occasion we found, and that fit us and our design style and our ethos better than large-scale weddings. The idea was that we were asked to design a bouquet and the personal flowers just based on what we had growing. And given that the flowers during the pandemic were widely unavailable, we suddenly became a source of floral design and flowers that were not to be able to be found anywhere else and weren't available anywhere else either. I think the thing that I really liked about weddings was not necessarily the grand installations and the large arrangements and all of the hustle and bustle and fuss of weddings, but rather that we were being a part of somebody's very special day and being able to utilize our flowers to create that moment, to have that experience for people. And what we found is that that same experience can be had with a very small elopement where you only have a small number of people there. The flowers aren't necessarily over the top or extravagant. They're simple, very humble, but beautiful nevertheless. And like many other things during the pandemic, I think that what happened for a lot of people is that we were able to start focusing on that which is most important to us, that which brings us the most feeling and emotion, those things that really make our hearts sing, that just bring a bright life to our everything. And I think as a result, not only did our clients find joy in our flowers, but we started to find joy in our flowers as well. You see, for a long time, we'd actually been really burnt out and suffering in flower farming. It's not something that a lot of people talk about, but flower farming is a really exhausting, really emotionally draining task to do. And it's really easy to wear yourself thin, get yourself to the point where you're on the verge of an emotional breakdown almost daily. It's supposed to be, I think, floating through fields in a linen dresser shirt, picking flowers and living your best life. How many times have you heard somebody say, "Oh, you work with flowers? That's my dream job." But they don't talk about the other things, like crop failures, or the worry that your frost is going to hit before your dahlias that you need for your wedding can be present. They also don't talk about the other uncertainties of being able to make your sales, being able to turn a profit on all the things that you've invested and spent time growing. And overall, that nagging feeling that you're pushing against this incredible force of nature that will do as it will, and sometimes doesn't have the best interest for you in mind, if any interest or consideration at all. It was also really starting to get very difficult as far as working with certain clients that demanded things that weren't necessarily what we were about. When we were doing a lot of weddings, more than 75% of the flowers requested were things that we either didn't grow or couldn't grow, and as a result we had to order a lot of material. Now, I understand that part of being a floral designer is, in essence, working with your client, and when your client wants to have a certain type of flower that's going to be important to them, you try to make it happen. But with the way that things were, and with the pandemic further affecting and further exponentially increasing the amount of stress and difficulty, we started wondering, was it really worth it? Was this what we were meant to do? Was there something that we were doing wrong? As it turns out, that wasn't necessarily the case. There is nothing actually wrong with what we were doing, and there is nothing wrong with the way that we were doing our business and growing our flowers. But what we did find was that the pandemic gave us the opportunity to sit down and really take a moment to rest and think about what it is that we were doing and what was most important to us. The thing that we thought was most important to us actually was the fact that we wanted to grow. I think Grace Alexander puts it best in her new book, "I garden not because I have any sort of obligation, but I garden because I can't not garden." And I think that's the same for me. I will always need to grow flowers. I will always need to feel the soil underneath my hands. I will forever be poring over seed catalogs. I will forever be thinking about flowers, dreaming of flowers. And ultimately, that's the most important thing to me, is the growing and cultivating and enjoying of these flowers. Now, granted, of course, we had a business to run, so that enjoyment of growing and the enjoyment of cultivation had to be channeled somewhere due to us living in a capitalistic society. So what were the ways that we could make money from it? Well, as I'd mentioned, we had talked about our different sales outlets, but with some of those outlets not really kind of being conducive to what we wanted out of it, or causing a lot of stress, or skipping over the fact that we did grow flowers entirely, we reevaluated a lot of things that we were doing, and to be fair, we dropped about 80% of what we were doing. And instead, we started focusing in on the things that made us happy, brought us joy, but were also profitable. As it turns out, even though the elopements didn't gross a lot of money as far as the prices that we were charging, it was actually a lot more profitable for our business overall. With less stress, less setup and teardown required, and in the case of a lot of pickups, no setup or teardown required, the fact we were able to utilize 100% of the flowers grown here on our growing operation, it was very much a game changer. All of a sudden, doing a wedding was absolutely no stress at all. Being able to create the bouquets and personals from our flowers was very easy, is very predictable, and is very low stress. And we found that our flowers made people happy, which ultimately, at the end of the day, is what was most important to us, that other people could enjoy our flowers in the form of wedding personals, and that they were becoming part of somebody's very special day. So this year, we're actually growing far fewer flowers than we had before. This is something that we experimented with last year, but by reducing the amount of varieties that we were growing, as well as being more mindful and thoughtful and careful in our planning of the plants that we were growing, we found that it actually reduced a lot of the stress and a lot of the issues we had run into previously when trying to grow flowers. Take for example the fact that we focus mostly on sweet peas for our spring crops. While we could grow all of these spring hardy annuals and a lot of the flowers that many people will try to grow in order to create variety and the most beautiful displays for floral design, we on the other hand found that sticking to just a few species helps in order to be able to make things much more clear-cut and streamlined when it comes to both growing, harvesting, and floral design. Sweet peas, for example, can pair with pretty much any other flower out there and offer multiple uses, including the stems with their flowers, the vines with their tendrils as a foliage, and also even using their shoots and tendrils as a sort of filler material. Along with other staples such as Daucus carota, Icelandic poppies, and bachelor buttons, although these floral bouquets were not necessarily filled with some of the most premium materials out there, they were beautiful, they were plentiful, and they were what our clients enjoyed and liked. Suddenly, there is no need to grow the latest and greatest variety. There is no need to invest in new and bigger and better. By following what works, and by following what works especially for us and our clients and our market, we were then able to really focus in on growing just a few crops well. It's funny, after years and years of trying everything out there, we usually come back to the same true and tried varieties that work well for us and that work well in designs. All of our materials are very versatile, like I mentioned with the sweet peas, have a very long bloom period and harvest time, and are very productive, usually being cut and come again varieties. By having plants that work hard for us and work well with our business plan and our design plan, it really takes off a lot of the stress and a lot of the issues that we were running into previously. Now I get it. As a flower farmer, or even as a gardener, you want to grow everything. And that's to be understood. We are human after all, and we like having new experiences, and we like experiencing new things. But at the same time, if it's causing you stress, if it's causing you to be anxious or to ruin yourself, if it's causing you to run yourself thin, it's probably best to try and simplify and streamline. I can't tell you how much easier things are now and how much less I'm stressing about the year. We're trying to see if we can actually get it down to about 6 species of flowers that we want to grow. I don't know if we'll quite be able to get it down to that, but at least under a dozen and we should be okay. What makes it nice is as far as being able to grow these flowers at scale that are all similar, it really cuts down on a lot of the different stresses and issues that may happen. Take for example when you're adding trellising or support to flowers. If they're all the same variety and require the same care and cultivation, it really simplifies things. As opposed to having to push netting higher or lower, adding trellises or not, having to add sticks or stems or anything to a certain variety of flowers that may require it, it can all be done very uniformly and very easily, and it just makes growing and cultivation so much easier. It also makes harvesting quite easy too, as opposed to having to mentally switch between different varieties of plants. We can simply just go straight down the entire row of a single variety of plant, and this helps us to be able to be very efficient as far as collecting and harvesting the blooms that we need. Lastly, there's something that's very beautiful about being able to utilize the materials that you have on hand. It goes with the whole circle as far as being able to source and grow and utilize all the blooms from your growing operation. But there is something great about not having to worry about incorporating all these different materials into your design, but being able to just know that the flowers have all been pre-selected to go together. The colors work, the shapes work, the succession planning works together so they all bloom in sync. And as a result, the design almost becomes second nature, simply flowing together into your hands. There's something just really lovely after years and years of struggling to work and plan and try and figure out something at the last minute when I didn't have enough materials of this or that. Having everything pre-proportioned and planned out just makes life easier, and it takes the stress off of designing and thinking about which flowers we need to grow. I actually think a lot of stress comes from flower farmers needing to think that they have to grow everything, or stressing out about, what if I need this? What if I need to grow this? What if I don't have enough of this? And by simplifying and streamlining the varieties that you're growing, relying on true standard, relying on easy standard and true and tried varieties, you're going to have a lot less stress, and that's okay. That's really okay. You don't need to stress out about flower farming and growing. Because I think once you do, you start losing that joy. You start losing that appeal. By us being able to reduce the stress of actually growing and harvesting and designing, it really then allowed that breathing room and that space for us to enjoy our flowers more. As opposed to thinking about the dozens of tasks that I would need to do, the different sowing and planting and harvesting schedules of dozens and dozens of different varieties, instead I was able to just focus on doing what I wanted to do most of all, and that was take care of my flowers, going through the rows, weeding, watering, deadheading as needed. And that's what's inevitably most important as far as flower farming, is being able to take care of the plants that you are growing. These are also plants that I know are going to grow well for us here in our environment and perform well for me, whether that's in the actual field or in a design as well. Everybody's environment is a little bit different, and therefore after growing a couple of years, we learn to know what did really well and what does best with very little attention or care, and those that are fussy or very hit or miss as far as their success and performance. This really helps us to be able to focus and streamline so that we don't have to worry about our crops and we don't have to worry about what flowers we're going to be having. We almost know and almost have a guarantee that we will have these flowers and these materials readily available at this time of year. And as we continue to flower farm past 6 years that we have been already, it gets easier every year because you just learn the flow, the rhythm, the timing. It becomes almost second nature. You can't do that if you're still growing dozens and dozens of new varieties and trying everything under the sun. But by being able to grow the varieties that are true and tried and tested, it's like reconnecting with old friends in a new season. They're familiar. You know their ins and outs, how they react, what you like about them, and it's a very enjoyable experience. So this year we're actually just growing a few varieties of flowers. For the spring, I'll talk to you a little bit about what we're growing so that you can kind of get an idea of our flower palette. So we are growing some ranunculus this year. It's a very small amount, not a ton, but enough to be a supplemental material for our bouquets. I personally really love ranunculus, but the fact that they are rather difficult to start in comparison to other plants, and that they can only come from corms, does somewhat limit their usability for us. Add into the fact that they're not 100% hardy here, and it makes them more of a bit of a difficult crop. So I'm not considering them technically one of the flowers that we're growing for the business, but more of a passion project. So setting the ranunculus aside for now, we're growing mainly Icelandic poppies for our focal flower. Now, those of you who know me know that I am absolutely nuts about Icelandic poppies. I think that their crinkled, crepe paper textured petals are awesome. They come in a wonderful variety of colors and shades. And they're pretty sturdy flowers when harvested and grown correctly. My main thing is that focal flowers are kind of hard to find in spring, but Icelandic poppies are really great for that. We're growing a ton of them this year, and they are going to be the focal staple flowers of every single bouquet and design that we make. I would almost dare to say that Icelandic poppies are quickly becoming one of our branding flowers. We include them in pretty much everything from early spring all the way to the middle of summer when they stop blooming, so our clients have come to kind of expect them and enjoy them. Now, there are plenty of filler flowers available in spring, and there's almost too many for us to really make a good decision as far as what to grow. But I did have to make a choice, so I ended up opting for two main filler flowers: Phlox Cherry Caramel and Viola Antique Shades. If you've never grown phlox before, it is the perfect filler flower. It has these long, windy stems that pair very well with just about anything and combine well into bouquets. It takes a little bit of time for them to get stem length long enough to be able to harvest, but if you keep pinching them back and forcing them to put out new shoots from the center of the plant, eventually they'll get long enough to harvest. And violas, while not necessarily the first flower that you would think of as a cut flower, are actually pretty great filler flowers. They bloom for a really long period of time for us, are super cold hardy in the winter, and have an extremely long vase life of about 2 weeks or so. Even if the original flowers start to fade a little bit, a lot of times on the stem that you pick, new flowers will start growing and blooming, giving the appearance of a much longer blooming flower than the one that you actually have. It takes a while for their stems to get long enough to cut, but during the longer days and the warmer temperatures as we head into the late spring, violas start to get about 12 to 18 inch stems. Maybe not long enough for a mixed bouquet, but perfect for a mason jar arrangement or a small posy. The antique shades variety of the violas is especially beautiful, coming in shades of gold, honey, bronze, and everything kind of in between, even with some hints of pink and mauve. It's a really beautiful variety, and we're excited to try them this year. Now, when growing flowers, of course, it's important to have some really great foliage plants. And unfortunately, in the spring, foliage plants are in short supply as far as the number of varieties out there that will produce and work well in spring. Most of the perennials that we would be able to grow aren't either going to be producing foliage at that time, or their foliage is going to be too soft and not hydrate well. To that end, we're growing two foliage plants that will work really nicely: Cerinthe, or honeywort, as well as Salvia viridis. Cerinthe is one of my favorite foliages because of the actual coloration of the plant itself is such chameleon-like in nature. Cerinthe has these silvery green-blue leaves, similar to eucalyptus in a way, that really just kind of pair well and provide great contrast for the other flowers that we find in spring. The stems rear up into this serpentine-like shape with these nodding heads that flower into these delicate purple bells, and it sounds just as crazy and just as magical as you might imagine. I love Cerinthe for the fact that it adds that sort of bulk and weight to an arrangement or a bouquet that you don't really get with a lot of other spring flowers. It's also quite productive and prolific, the only downside really being that it's not that hardy compared to the other hardy annuals, only being hardy really down to about 24 degrees Fahrenheit. So this is one that we usually start later in the year to ensure it does survive. The other foliage plant, Salvia viridis, also known as clary sage, but not to be confused with the species Salvia scleria, is a really prolific and really easy hardy annual to grow. It's a shame that it really doesn't get more popularity than it does because it's such a great and resilient and productive plant. But that's okay, because it means that it's a lot more special of a plant to me, and there's always going to be seeds available, so I'm not complaining. Salvia viridis, or clary sage, starts off as a very well sagey looking plant, with the same sort of wrinkled, smooth green leaves that you would find on a sage plant that you would use for culinary purposes. As it grows, however, it starts sending stems upwards that will then erupt into these colorful bracts. The bracts are what appear to be the flower, even though it's not actually the flower. They're instead specialized leaves that are colored in pink, purple, and white. I personally prefer using the white variety since it pairs well and blends most easily with a lot of the other materials that we're growing in spring, but the pink and purple are wonderful too. It even works as a dried material if you cut it when the color is most vivid and hang it down upside to dry. And it will continue blooming actually all the way from spring through fall if kept deadheaded and cut in most environments. Really just such a fantastic cut flower and very versatile. In addition to these foliage and filler and focal flowers, we also of course want to have some other interesting textural items, or what I call frill flowers. In the spring, I think it's always important to have a bit of what a lot of floral designers will consider as an air or lace or some sort of textural item, and this comes in the form of two very wonderful plants in the umbelliform form shape group, which are Daucus and Rolaia. Both of these are named after their botanical terms just to prevent confusion. Daucus, otherwise known as Daucus carota, is a wild carrot that's been cultivated into a more ornamental form of plant that's great for cut floral arrangements and design. The one that we grow is called Purple Kisses, and that's because it creates this lovely mauvey chocolatey variety of blooms, also mixed in with some other types of blooms that are more of the white color or more of a soft brown in between as well. Daucus is very hardy and very productive, and we can continue to cut off of it from a very long period of time to provide easy, airy, textural elements to our bouquets and arrangements. It really adds this very elegant sort of feel to any arrangement or bouquet that it's a part of, especially for bouquets. I really love placing some big heads of Daucus into a bridal bouquet just for that movement and that wonderful sort of ephemeral sparkle that it adds. And whereas Daucus carota is big and foamy and airy, Orlaia is much more refined but still in the kind of same shape with that umbellifer flower head. So Orlaia looks more kind of like a old-fashioned doily or piece of lace that has been knitted by some fairy creature and tossed on top of the plant. Their petals are actually wide and looking like bird feathers that are oriented in towards the center of the flower, but it floats effortlessly through the air like this big flat paper snowflake like the ones you use to make in grade school. I personally love it because it's a great contrast to a lot of the other materials that are present in spring, and this is truly one beautiful flower that you must have in your bridal bouquets if you're making them. Both of these flowers do really well grown out and overwintered if possible. Orlaia is actually really, really hardy to where it'll survive down to about -4°F, or so I'm told at least. But both of these plants, if kept deadheaded, watered, and fertilized, will continue to bloom for months for you, providing an almost endless amount of textural and frilly variety of materials for your bouquets and designs. Lastly, I also want to talk about a couple other plants that are a little bit of more fun elements that I'd like to add in more on occasion than regularly, but are too beautiful and too cool to mess up. The first is Bells of Ireland, or Molucella laevis. Now, Bells of Ireland have a very, I would say, well, fair reputation of being really difficult to grow and harvest. They tend to germinate after being exposed to cold temperatures for a long period of time. Now we're talking, you know, freezing temperatures. And even being put into a freezing and thawing cycle helps to, in essence, break down both the seed coat and the hormones within the seed that prevent it from germinating. I've heard a lot of stories about frustrated flower growers who will wait and wait and wait for their Bells of Ireland to germinate, finally get frustrated, dump it off in a pile of dirt somewhere, and then later come back to find that their baby Bells of Ireland are sprouting madly in that pile of dirt. Bells of Ireland are originally located in a part of Central Asia, not actually from Ireland, the same way the Iceland poppies aren't actually from Iceland. So keeping this in mind, being out on a windy, rocky, cold, exposed steppe somewhere, we would assume that the best way for the seeds to germinate would be when conditions are starting to become spring, which in a windy mountain steppe would be when temperatures start dipping above and below freezing temperatures. And that's what we try to do with our Bells of Ireland. We'll sow them into a small flat or a propagator tray, leave them outside when it's going to be alternating between above freezing and below freezing, which happens quite frequently here. The Bells of Ireland will then start germinating very readily, and we'll be able to plant those out in early or mid-spring. Bells of Ireland actually do really well here, despite their reputation of being a cool weather plant. They tend to actually like our poor soil and hot weather conditions, which is surprising given that most other spring flowers don't really seem to like our climate. There's one other flower that I absolutely have to grow during the spring season, and that's foxgloves. Foxgloves, otherwise known as digitalis as I refer to it, are some really great flowers with a very unique shape that you can't really find anywhere else. Now, not all foxgloves are created the same. Most of them are what we would call biennials that have to actually grow an entire season, go through winter, and then bloom the following spring. However, there are certain varieties, such as Foxy, Camelot, and Dalmatian of the digitalis, that will actually bloom first year if started from seed early enough. I've already started a whole bunch of Foxy in a tray. The seedlings have overwintered and are getting a really good cold period that's going to induce blooming later on, known as cold vernalization. I'll plant out these foxgloves in a couple of weeks. They'll be allowed to grow in, get nice and full before they start blooming, and will provide a whole season of blooms again so long as they keep deadheaded and watered and fertilized. The annual or first year flowering varieties of foxgloves are actually far more prolific and vigorous than the perennial or biennial varieties. This allows us to have a first full flush harvest of the foxgloves in spring, and then allows us to continue to cut off of them sporadically throughout the summer and into the fall. Foxgloves, of course, are a very beautiful, romantic, very refined flower that we enjoy using in arrangements. And lastly, but not leastly, I am growing a whole mess of sweet peas this year. We actually did really well last year with sweet peas, and I'll be doing a whole other podcast on it. But what you need to know is that even though our temperatures start getting hot pretty early on in May, our sweet peas continue to bloom for us from April all the way through July. It was incredible. Off of just 10 plants, I was cutting off dozens and dozens of blooms every single day. I have never seen as productive plants as the sweet peas were. It boggles my mind to think that I could be literally cutting fistfuls of blooms off of these sweet peas every single day. it got to the point where my husband actually said, you need to stop bringing jars of sweet peas into the house, because they were stacked everywhere in the kitchen, the living room, the bedroom, the bathroom, and we were running out of space and jars for these sweet peas. I absolutely fell in love with them, but even more importantly, they reseeded. We did not know this, but in the hot and sunny conditions here of New Mexico, sweet peas do very well as far as producing seed. And as a result, we were able to save literally hundreds of seeds from just a few plants. I'm excited to plant those again this year to receive even more seed from these plants, and I've added a lot of new varieties. Some of the varieties I'm most excited about include Mr. P, which is a flecked variety that has purple, blue, and white. I'm also excited for Streamer's Chocolate from Johnny Seeds that has this lovely, again, flake texture to its coloration that is both a sort of dusky, mauvey brown, purple, as well as with white. And of course, the mainstay from last year, High Scent, which, as its name would imply, has the most beautiful, heady, wonderful scent that you've ever smelled. All in all, I'll be growing about 10 varieties of sweet peas this year, and I think I'm probably going to be growing more in the future as well. But I'm hoping to be able to save seed from a lot of these plants here to be able to not only grow them in mass next year, but also to offer seed to other people and other growers in the following years. Given that sweet pea seed has been hard to come by, it's my hope that I can help to continue the tradition of being able to grow great sweet peas and being able to share them with people, and also to prevent certain varieties from disappearing from the market. So that's our spring lineup here. And as you can see, it's not a lot of varieties of flowers that we're growing. I specifically left out a lot of the one-hit wonders like Nigella and Buplurum because it's a lot of work and it's a lot of waiting time just to harvest from a couple plants that are not going to continue to produce and bloom for us. I also left out a lot of the fussier plants too, even though I did mention the Ranunculus, you know, and they're still technically part of the plant. I'm not including them as the main flowers. There are some other varieties like Larkspur, poppies, and other varieties that really just are great, but they're not specifically suited for our purpose. And as far as being able to design our lineup and our growing process, these are the flowers that are going to work best for us, and I'm really happy to see how they turn out this year. So stay tuned. I'll be talking more about these flowers and how to simplify and streamline your flower farming process in the future. And more importantly, how to fall back in love with the flowers that you're growing and falling in love with the process as well. Thanks so much for joining me here today. I'm sorry that it's been such a long time since I've connected with you, but I'm really glad to be back. And I think that the last year has really given me some time to think and meditate and just be a lot more centered with where I'm at. I hope that this year finds you well. And I hope that you're taking some time to center and meditate and think about where you want to take yourself and your flower farming operation as well. Until next time, keep growing, flower friends. Thanks for joining us here today on the Kokoro Garden Podcast. If you'd like to know more about flower farming or gardening and growing flowers in general, you can check us out online at thekokorogarden.com. That's thekokorogarden.com.